All right, we got our buddy Josh Lewenberg a little bit later this hour. He'll join us. The NBA draft tonight. The Raptors do not have a pick in the first round, but they will be picking 33rd. And there's a lot of Canadian content in the draft tonight and a lot of rumors in the NBA, including the OG Anunoby.
Dude, that's not going
Portland.
Away, man.
No, OG, there's something to it, and I think it's somewhat understandable, is that it's Van Vliet, Siakam, and Barnes is past him. You know, like right now, I think OG's looking at it and realizes he's number four in the band, right? He's Ringo. He's playing the drums, and
yeah, but
that doesn't mean
you're
not
important. Where is he higher than that? What team does he hire? Is it Portland?
That's the thing, man. Like, I think there needs to be some self-awareness here. And to be fair to Anunoby, like, he's not going to come out and speak on this anyway. He never would, just based on his personality. But he hasn't corroborated anything. He hasn't come out and stated anything. To our knowledge, he hasn't demanded anything. This happens in the NBA. Rumors get out. There might be something to it. I wouldn't be surprised if he wants to be used in different ways. A lot of players in a lot of sports want that. But Anunoby is not a superstar. He's not a star, in my opinion. Like, he's not a guy that goes somewhere else and all of a sudden
explodes. He's kind
of
just a good player, isn't he?
Well, what's his ceiling?
Just a really
good
player.
Like, he's just a good player, right? Like,
yep.
That's good his ceiling,
player.
Right?
Good player. Good two-way player. He's had injury issues, you know, really throughout his career. But if he's healthy and playing, really high-end defender, a guy who can give you a bit of pop offensively, and that's that. You know, I don't see any more in terms of what is expected out of Anunoby. So, but he's a piece. He's on a relatively cheap deal, and he's a good player. Like, he is a good player, and he's young.
Right.
So I don't think he's going to be dealt between now and the draft tonight. I don't believe he'll be drafted or traded over the summer, but anything is possible in the NBA. Anything is possible. You know, we'll see. And again, Siakam, Van Vliet, Barnes. Like, those are your big three right now. Anunoby probably understands that.
And don't you think they're still going to be looking for big game hunting over top of those three? So, what if they landed somebody? Like, that's – I think Masai's – are you going to go into the season with that group, or are you going to still continue to try and get better?
I think – there's a chance, you know, really either option is there, you know, and right. I would lean towards putting money on the fact that they'll just come back with the same core, moving some of the depth pieces around. But we'll see what Josh has to say about that. Lewenberg will join us a little bit later this hour. The Jays are off tonight. They're in Milwaukee tomorrow. Tim Kirkjian in about an hour on a crazy stat that popped up online today about Jordan Romano and his splits at home and on the road. It's the craziest stat. And it's not an overly positive one in terms of one specific part of the stat. So we'll tell you about that a little bit later on. And Dave Pullen will join us here in just a moment. And we'll get the draft. We got another round. I mean,
we could do
six, 7 rounds. Like, we've been doing the draft, I think, has been really – there's a lot of buzz. A lot of people are buzzing about our draft here.
I love it.
Yeah, I think, you know, the stories that we'll be tracking throughout the summer draft is something a lot of people are buzzing about.
I think Malika Andrews is the first woman to host the – but I thought she hosted last year. Maybe she was just doing interviews last year. But I think she's hosting the NBA draft. Kudos to her.
She's outstanding. Yeah. Outstanding talent. Yeah,
her and Duffy are the two best broadcasters in North America, in my personal opinion.
There you go. That's lofty praise.
It is good praise.
Duffy did his whole golf thing, playing 54 holes the other day, and – I think he's up to something today that, you know, he's probably teeing it again. And
boy, he's got a good life, that guy.
He's a busy guy, that James Duffy. Very busy guy. So Pooley will join us here in a moment. And obviously we spent a good portion of the past hour talking about the game last night and, of course, the OT winner. And I think the legacy of Kadri is being overshadowed by the idiocy of breaking down, you know, a subjective call. And the letter of the law would suggest that it was too many men on the ice. I'm not disputing that. I mean, it was a lazy change by McKinnon. Kadri jumped too early. The fact that he gets the puck, he scores, it accentuates the issue. But for me, it should be about what that guy accomplished last night. The fact that he played, and he played, what, 19 minutes and scores the OT winner? Like, you can't ask for a better script than that. If you're the NHL, you should be yelling and screaming for people to stop focusing on how many people are on the ice and focused on the guy that actually had the puck and scored.
It's never going to happen. Too many people have a voice. They're like, I told you, the nerds on Twitter, I just can't believe this would happen in the NHL in the Stanley Cup final. Like, it's outrageous, and they think they're being heard, and it's just lunacy, man.
Well, but it's loud. It's a big topic. I'm not disputing that, but...
Right, but you know what? Like, they're in Colorado. They don't care. They don't care who's yelling and screaming
on
Twitter.
They care less. Jared Bednar said, oh, that play? He was like, oh, that play? He goes, yeah, that play happens 10 times a night.
You know what? And like, John Cooper is, we love him. He's a showman as well. Like, he's a guy that he's trying to press buttons. He's trying to come up right now as we speak with a solution to win in Colorado tomorrow.
I know,
night.
But Noodles, my take on his walk-off, and I love Coop. He's a buddy of mine. I take him out to dinner all the time. But it seemed like when he left the podium that they were going to kind of huddle and meet and see if they were going to do something about that, and they weren't.
No.
You know what I mean? It was like, I got to go, and in the dramatic walk-off, it was like, it's not like some people were going to huddle in a room and say, oh, man, we got to change this call, and I got to go back up. That wasn't the case.
No. It's not baseball. You can't plan a protest. You know, like, that's not happening.
That's it.
Joining us now, the Maple Toyota Hotline. Here's our TSN hockey analyst, Dave Poulin. Pooley, what did you think of the nature of Cooper's little diatribe postgame last night?
Well, he's a bright guy. We know that. And I think that was for his team in the sense that the only way we lost was a too many men on the ice goal. That's the only way this team could lose. And guys, I've been in that position before after a game where I was so upset and so angry. Sometimes it was directed at my own team that I couldn't talk. And the fact that he answered one question, like, okay, I had one reporter from the town newspaper, one from the student newspaper, and maybe one from the other team we were playing. And there were times when I had to blow them off because I was so mad and so upset. And sometimes it was directed at a call during the game, and sometimes it was at my own team. But I think he was at that point last night that he knew that he was going to say something that he regretted if he kept going at that point. So he sort of like waxed eloquently about whatever, playing in the NHL, and then answered the one question and then kind of left the cliffhanger out there. And I was driving home. When did you first hear about it, last night?
I don't know. Should we even be talking about that?
Well, no, but it was crazy because it was so late afterwards, right?
Yeah, I know. I got a word from our buddy that we just mentioned, James Duffy.
Yeah.
It was at 12:40, and I was already sleeping. And he said, can you
please
call me?
But it was so delayed. That was the whole thing. Like, it was so – because no one – there wasn't a single person at the time that said too many men on the ice. Not a single person.
Yeah, but Dave, when you see Cooper last night, did you not think that there – as much as you said mad, disappointment – did you not think that there was a part of them that was stunned? The Tampa Bay Lightning always win that game. The last 3 years they have, and they didn't do it, and it was almost like, I'm shocked.
Well, that's it. That was my point about to his team. There has to be a reason we lost because we're the Tampa Bay Lightning, and we always win that game.
Yeah.
You know, we're sitting watching the game last night, and we're just like, okay, well, Colorado comes back and ties it. Tampa's going to figure out a way, and sure enough, their goalie stands on his head for the first handful of saves in overtime. You're like, they're going to do it again. They're going to get one chance. And, you know, the play it happens on, guys, was something that they've, you know, really been effective part of the game plan, and that was the long flip pass. So they throw it out there. It doesn't become an icing. And so, you know, to his credit, Kemper stands up and plays it. He makes a perfect, perfect lead pass to a flying Lekkonen, who had just come out. And, you know, and then he threads the needle to Kadri. Well, with Kadri, it was a terrible line change, but they happen all the time. And they're going to crack down on it now, and they're going to say, okay, we're going to call too many men on the ice, and they're going to do it through exhibition, and they're going to focus on it. Because they've done that a couple times in the last few years. Because teams get so good at cheating and so good at, hey, they're sending them out of that end of the box, I'm coming in on this end of the box. You know, I get my 10 feet there, my 10 feet there. You pick up 70 feet. And you know what happens the most is 3-on-3. In 3-on-3, they change like 40, 50 feet changes. And so it wasn't the change, but I agree with you. Oh, Coop was stunned because that play hasn't happened to them in the last couple of years. It's always gone the other way. And, you know, the sort of the icing on the cake, guys, if you stay with the play, no one knows it's in the net. How about Stammer trying to sneak it out of there? Did you see that?
Sneaky little play.
Did you see that?
Yeah, but like
he puts his hand over it, and he's looking kind of at the referee out of the corner of his eye. He's the only one that knows it went in at that point.
I don't think you can get away with that in this day and age.
He's going to sneak it out of there. And, yeah. And like, no cameras. Nobody's going to see him do it. And then he doesn't even look when it hits the ice. He skates away. I thought that was just brilliant. Brilliant.
Pooley, I thought Tampa was fantastic in the regular part of the game. And then in OT, Colorado took over. And, you know, I went back on it. Game one went to OT. Game two, yes, it was a blowout, but game three was a blowout the other way. Like this, and then last night, OT again. This could easily be a 2-2 series, or Tampa could be ahead if they won both of those OT games. So it's, I think 3-1, I wouldn't say it's flattering because I think Colorado has been the better team overall statistically and everything, but Tampa, I'm not sleeping on them winning next game. I think there's a chance they could do it. It's a very tough building, and everything will be stacked against them, but I haven't written Tampa off. They're a team that has been resilient, and I agree. I thought they were going to win that game last night. I thought they were the better team through 60, just not through the rest. The overtime, Colorado was clearly the better team.
Right, and through, we had clipped out a bunch of examples of how smothering their defense was for Tampa. They were doing a great job in the neutral zone. They were doing a great job in the defensive zone. And they only gave up, what, 4 shots in the first period? I mean, they yeah. played a very good game. I'm not sure they're not running out of bodies. And the bodies that are there, you know, are pretty banged up. I mean, yeah. Kucherov was not his electric self last night. How much of that was, you know, was the other night? You know, Nick Paul is just beaten up and Chernak is down now. That looks like, you know, he's down. Boy, oh boy, you'd love to see a healthy team right now. You'd love to see two healthy teams going at it. But Tampa's pretty beaten up. But I'm with you, Jamie. I'm not counting them out, and I don't think it's over yet. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they found a way. Because all they're saying is they got to win one game. They win one, they take it home again. Let it happen from there. And we know they've got a goalie that can steal a game. We know that. And you got to give Kemper some credit, too, last night, because he was good after the first couple. He was good. He made some really good saves. So, you know, it's may be a little disappointing in this series, although two games have gone to overtime. It hasn't been as competitive within the game sometimes as I thought it was going to be. I still think these are the two best teams.
Chatting with Dave Pullen, our TSN hockey analyst. Nazem Kadri's possibly, you know, 48 hours away from being a cup champ and about 2 weeks away from being an unrestricted free agent. And he's not young, but he's coming off a career season. I think last night he only helps his case. The fact that he plays through what he has to deal with, the fact that he's, you know, surgically repaired thumb and he's scoring OT winners in game 4 of a cup final is truly a remarkable characteristic that I think he should be very proud of. And I'm curious how much of his leverage when it comes to being a UFA will be that intangible. The fact that he is not a horse you need to drag out of the barn. He's a horse you might have to drag into it sometimes to settle him in because he wants to play. He's competitive every single night. Like, I don't think that value comes up enough. It's all about the statistics. It's all about the analytics. This guy, he'll go through a wall for a preseason game, let alone a cup final game. How much would that possibly be worth to a GM in the future?
Well, it's the ingredient that's hardest to find and that everybody's looking for. And it shines through. And the frustrating thing for those involved with Nazem is it hasn't shone through in the playoffs because he's taken himself out of the picture on three right. different occasions. And the fact that he's grown up and is more mature now is the biggest single asset. The fire has always been the same. And the drive and desire, and not only is he coming to the party, he's taking other guys with him. He gives his line mates no choice but to be involved, and he's always involved. And, you know, I think he's going to have some interesting suitors, and maybe some ones we hadn't thought about. And, you know, a team name came up yesterday that was very intriguing to me, and that was the Washington Capitals. And, you know, because it looks like Nick Backstrom is not going to be back, right? He's got that hip that, you know, that major surgery on his hip that guys just don't come back from. So, you know, you could plug him into it. Can you imagine Nazem playing with Tom Wilson and Ovechkin? What a nightmare line that would be. You wouldn't want to go out there against them. But he's going to get paid, guys. He is. And he does a lot of different things well. And we watched Zach Hyman get paid. And Nazem Kadri's going to get paid next year.
Yep, I fully expect that he will. Austin Matthews, on the other hand, has a couple of years left on his deal, and he's now a couple of days removed from winning a Hart and a Ted Lindsay. How many more do you project for Matthews? How many Hart trophies will he contend for or possibly win in his career?
You know, I went through this because multiple winners are rare, and in our recent memory, there's only one guy that's won it twice in a row, and that was Ovechkin. He's won three, but the third one was separated. And, you know, even McDavid's were, 20 and 24 years old? Are they 3 or 4 years apart? Crosby's were separated. And I'm not sure that that's the play of the individual or the voter. Like, I'm not sure if once a guy wins, that people don't look to somebody else who was really close last year. And it's not the right way to do it, but that's clearly it's hard to win two in a row. I mean, guys just don't do it. And when you look at that factor, that weighs in significantly. Now, he could also go the other way and make 60 goals look like a small number next year. That wouldn't surprise me at all if he went, you know, way north. And because he is capable, and we can't lose sight of the fact that he's got the first line all-star right wing to ride shotgun with him. And, you know, that's a pretty good pairing when you can put two of the top six players in the league by voting standards on the same line. And they read each other and see each other so well. So I think he's got it in him. I'd be more apt to say he's got multiple rockets in a row. But because of the voting element of the Hart, I mean, we're watching some of the wacky things that have come out of the Hart voting. And I think it's great that this all goes public, and I'm a voter. And I don't mind at all the fact that my votes are made public. But, you know, you see some guys voting for him fifth, like seriously. And then you look at what town they're from, or you say, okay, well, are you trying to negate from your guy? And you know you got to vote for him, so you vote for him fifth. So at least he's on the record books that you voted for him. But you're trying to help your guy as much as you can. Clearly that's not the way it should happen, but I think that's the way it does happen sometimes.
Yeah, we were talking yesterday that it was pointed out to me in Edmonton that there were five people on the out of the 195 that didn't have McDavid on their Hart ballot at all, which, I mean, it's quite shocking. Like, you know, if you don't believe that he should win, which is fine, it's your opinion, but to not have him on your ballot, I thought that was...
Jamie, I told you, lose your vote. You lose your vote.
Well, yeah, but it's not your right to... The thing is, you can't lose your vote just because we disagree with their opinion.
No, it's because you're stupid. Stupid, that's why. But, how do you watch Connor McDavid get 123 points and don't have him on your list? You lose your vote.
Pooley, where do you lay on this?
We're back to the Baseball Hall of Fame when they went through that huge controversy, and they did take votes away from guys. But they were taking votes away from guys, though, that hadn't even been to a game or watched a game, and they still had a vote. And
come on, man.
Think that it's some kind of spite if you don't have an Austin Matthews or Connor McDavid in the top five. Like, you can't, like, show me five guys better. You can't. And don't say you've got a better way of looking at the game, because the majority is where the majority is. And those are two of the best players in the game. And to not have a guy like that on your ballot, and, you know, there can be a sleeper. Like, I don't think, I'm pretty sure I didn't have Kaprizov on my ballot. So the state of Minnesota may think, you know, I don't know my hockey because I didn't vote for Kaprizov. But, you know, there's a lot of good players. We understand that, but the best are the best. And to say that Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews isn't one of the top couple of players in the game makes zero sense.
Well, yeah. Those are the ones that I take more issue with. That if you concluded based on the arbitrary nature of the definition of valuable, that you look at, you know, okay, could the Leafs still do this without Matthews? All right. You know, could this happen? Okay. Like, maybe you can twist yourself into a position that puts him fourth or fifth or what have you. But it's when you do that and then push a guy into, like, the first pick on your ballot, that's when I'm talking about revoking, you know, voting rights, because it's ridiculous if it's some random player in a market, you know, that whoever it happens to be, you know, Sebastian Aho first. It's like, come on, get serious. Like, I get it.
Right.
You know, like, I get it. He doesn't get enough love. He's a great player. But no, he can't be. And I'm just using him as an example. But those are the more extreme ones that you see. And you understand, like, the regional nature of the sport. There's a lot of people that only cover the one team. And that's what they know. And they understand the importance of their player to their team. And they don't really focus on anything else. And that's why you get a lot of this.
Way back last year, too, right, Brian? Because I didn't vote last year. Mm-hmm. Because of the pandemic, they trimmed it way back. So it'd be interesting to go back and look at last year and see what the voting was like. And someone will do that, I'm sure, and say, was it more equitable with less people voting? Like to your point, you don't just get to vote, right? You have to have some, I guess, credentials or some believability to be able to vote. And because I don't know, you said 190, Jamie, that's the number?
No, I read on the, you know, what is it? Cervelli puts out that statement.
Right.
And so it was 200 votes, but 5 disqualified by not getting in, like not forgetting to vote or abstaining or whatever. So there were 5 taken off. And then there were a couple that were disqualified because they only put 4 people down when they were supposed to put 5. And he names them, like, you know, our buddy Rick Tocchet. Like, there was a couple that I think he only put 4 instead of 5 on one choice. So he didn't get to choose on that particular award. And he lays it out there. So he said, with the heart, there was 195 votes. So you go through, there was 195 different votes, and there were 5 people that left McDavid off of. If you actually look at his numbers, he only got 190 votes, whether that was first or fifth, you know, right through to fifth. So there were 5 people that left him off. And obviously there was a bunch of, inspectors online last night, including Al's brother, that was pointing out, okay, here's a guy from, like, the Olean News. I don't even know what city that's in, that, you know, had, I think, Kaprizov first and had, I can't remember, like, it was Huberto. There were still some very good picks
no
in
Matthews,
there. But it was
no McDavid.
Yeah, there was one with no Matthews, McDavid, and then there was another one with, like, Ovi and ahead of Matthews. There was just some
unique choices.
You lose
your vote. Sorry, it's not credible. Well, you're not
unique
credible.
Unique choices. Unique. Listen, put it that way.
There's a lot of great players. A lot of guys that had great years this year in particular.
Exactly.
Right? Like, there were a lot of guys who had phenomenal seasons. But
yeah, no question. But you have to. I think you have to have – you arguably are at a point where if you've got 195, you've got to go through the list and really – you know, you could put a panel together and said, okay, you know, does this person with a circulation of a paper of 42, you know, in a town where he doesn't even watch, you know, half the teams play, does he deserve to have a vote? Why does he have a vote? Does he just have it because of history? Or, you know, do you have to revamp that?
Yeah, well, we'll see. I don't know if it's the top priority considering what happened last night.
It might not be.
Yeah, they might be dealing with different, you know, issues right now. We'll see.
Well, now, to the point, let's watch next game, and are they going to be really tight on the line changes? Linesman's going to be over there saying, watch the changes, guys, watch the changes. Yeah. And, you know, I was as concerned with the probably 4 calls that are called at any other point during the game that weren't called late in that game. And I know it's let them play, and I get that, but I think the players did a really good job at the start of the playoffs. Like, it was really tight at the start of the playoffs. And the players did a good job of adjusting. And they said, okay, this is the way it's going to be called. Because there were a lot of penalties early, and then it backed off, and guys just weren't taking penalties. But last night, man, there was a hit from behind. There was a trip. There was a low cross check. There was a hook on, and I think it was almost equal to on each team.
Yeah.
Call the penalties. And those are 2 veteran refs, and that's old school putting the whistle away at that point in the game. I have more of an issue with that than I do with the long line change.
Well, I'm sure it'll come. A day will come, Pooley, where we just review every single shift and we'll play. It'll be like cricket. Every game will take
5-hour games.
Yeah, no, it'll take 3 days, and we'll figure it out. It's no problem. We can get there. It's just a matter of time. All right, Pooley. Thanks for doing this, buddy. Enjoy game five tomorrow night.
Enjoy the hockey, guys. Have a good night.
Dave Pullen, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota and check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory. Arriving daily, it's Red Tag Days. Visit MapleToyota.com. All right, Josh Lewenberg, a little bit later this hour in the NBA draft. What's up with Kyrie and Kevin Durant? I forgot that because of the Harden deal, Houston has like all of their picks in the future, all of the pick swaps, because if Kyrie opts out and they have to trade Durant, Ben Simmons is their only hope. That's it.
Wow.
Ben Simmons.
Guess who walks after that? Steve. Well, who knows about Steve Nash, but he'll be walking right after that.
Well, you know what would be hilarious is if Ben Simmons demanded a trade. He hasn't played a second for the team.
Imagine Steve Nash thinking he was going to a super team and Ben Simmons is the only thing left standing.
Yeah, good luck. You talk about a guy getting roasted and opening himself up. You see the pictures of him, like, fly fishing.
Yeah. He's got a buddy behind him taking a picture. This guy just enjoying life.
Never
he's
plays.
Out there fly,
yeah. It's all good.
Street
Never
clothes.
Plays, but he's wheeling in. He's reeling in a 150-pound fish.
Right.
Like, why would you take a picture of that? Like, the stupidity involved in that is outrageous.
Honestly. Wow. Like, is there no self-awareness? Is there not a PR team you employ that says,
yeah, guys, I'm going to go, no, I'm going to come fishing, but
maybe
let's just put the phones away.
I can only think of one better, and you guys know what it is. Can you guess what it is?
Phil.
A late night post is like,
yeah, nothing better than fishing.
couldn't imagine something better or something if people were writing like, how about playing in the playoffs? How about a Stanley? Like, do you remember that? He was fishing.
Oh, yeah, him and Bozy.
Or like I'd the, rather be right now.
Or I'd
on the lake
be.
With Bozy.
Yeah,
that was one of the greatest. Like, read the room. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that was one of the like greatest unfortunate. Was that a tweet or?
Yeah, it
an
was
Instagram?
A tweet. Phil tweeted that out. It was like 12:30 in the morning too. He was up. He was having drinks and fishing, and they were in like Montana or something.
And Bozy. Let's see if we can find that. I guarantee you, Joe from the Bridge has that like as a screensaver or something.
Right. It's on his phone. It's a screensaver on his phone, probably.
I'm telling you, that would have been that one. That's the Ben Simmons type of situation.
It's the equivalent of Ben Simmons. Yeah. It's the equivalent. And the Giants wide receivers, remember, on going down to Miami and
on the
hanging
boat.
Out on the yacht and then going up to Green Bay and getting smoked by the Packers. There's been a lot of great ones. All right, so Lewenberg coming up. Get back into our draft. We're drafting the top stories we'll be tracking throughout the summer between now and Labor Day. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Josh Lewenberg in about 10 minutes on the NBA draft tonight. What he makes of these OG Anunoby rumors. Not a rumor because I guess you can go right to the source. You guys see Arch Manning has declared to Texas. He's going to play for the Longhorns.
Dude.
In a year from now.
He just stacked his Rolodex with that pick. He's got like a tank top on. He's got like Nair short shorts on. His leg muscles are bulging. He's jacked. He's a good looking dude. His hair's flowing. He's sweating. He's holding a football. It's like, Arch, you didn't need to do that. Save some for the rest of the guys out there. You just obliterated it.
Well, man, listen, and Texas has been off the map. It's one of the, you know, it's got a great program historically, but really since Vince Young left, they've been nowhere. And the idea of Arch Manning, who's the number one, it's a Manning for starters, right?
How does he not go to Tennessee, Hayes? Like, is Tennessee not sitting there going, what the hell's going on here?
Well, them and Ole Miss, right? Ole Miss is where Archie Manning went, the patriarch, the grandfather.
Same as Eli.
And Eli went there, exactly. And I guess this dude's like, hey, man, I want to go live in Austin, Texas. I don't blame him for that, man. Austin is an awesome town.
Yes. Look at this guy.
Yeah, like this guy is going to be the king. You talk about someone that will run that campus the second he shows up. And, so that causing a huge stir. And now with this money these guys can make, everyone's thinking Texas must have paid him a fortune or worked out some sort of deal where this guy's probably already a millionaire. He's going to be a millionaire the second he shows up on campus.
Oh, big time.
But there's a lot of expectations, man. Like, Archie Manning, I think, went – he go first or second overall in the draft. I think second overall. Peyton and Eli went first. And now this dude's, you know, Arch Manning, the number one recruit, going to Texas. Anything short of first round pick. It's like a family bust almost, which has got to be tough. A lot of pressure on that kid. But
he's off to Texas.
He'll be okay. You guys want to hear somewhat of a ruthless comment on a radio play-by-play call last night?
Yes.
So Cleveland was playing Minnesota, and the Guardians play-by-play, which I think is important to distinguish here, because they would never say this about one of their own players. But Miguel Sano is, you know, he's a larger dude, and he's a Minnesota Twin. He's had a, you know, pretty good career. Not currently in the lineup. And here's what the play-by-play for the Cleveland Guardians had to say about that.
Miguel Sano, he's not hurt. He's just fat. I mean, that's as brutally honest as we can be. He's down in Fort Myers trying to get in shape.
That's wow. Tough.
That is play it again. Harsh.
Miguel Sano, he's not hurt. He's just fat. I mean, that's as brutally honest as we can be. He's down in Fort Myers trying to get in shape.
And I want to play it once a day. Just that he's not hurt. He's fat.
He's not hurt. He's fat.
Yeah, clip that
He's
part.
Not hurt. He's just fat.
Anybody that's slow or running slow, we just hit play.
He's not hurt. He's just fat.
If one of us takes a day off, you know that's coming every single second.
That's right.
He's not hurt. He's just fat.
That's tough, though. It's very disrespectful.
Oh, incredibly disrespectful.
You know, it's especially
But if the guy's fat.
He's a big dude.
I get it. But, like, in today's, you know, sensitivity, all of that type of stuff, that's the body shaming. It's harsh. It is actually disrespectful. Do I think it's funny? Yes, but that doesn't matter.
Hey, man, you're a pro athlete. You can't be fat.
Do I think they would ever have the stones to say that about a Cleveland Guardian? Absolutely not.
No.
Absolutely not. But because he plays for the Twins, it's all good.
Yeah.
All right, Josh Lewenberg coming up on the NBA draft tonight. The Canadians in contention for going in the lottery, certainly in the first round. What does he make of the Anunoby rumors? And what happens if Kyrie leaves and KD leaves to the Brooklyn Nets? That more with Josh Lewenberg. He'll join us next. All right, we got the NBA draft tonight. The Raptors currently not with a first-round pick. Anything could change between now and the first round. Slated to pick with the 33rd pick into the second round. And we've got our boy Josh Lewenberg hanging around the compound. It's great to see you, buddy. How you doing?
What's up, guys? I miss you here. I got the whole place to myself.
Yeah.
That's right. It's a
That's
good
the way we awesome. Like it, J-Lo. J-Lo. J-Lo.
J-Lo.
That
works, too.
Not a bad handle. Can you explain the OG
scenario? I don't know if I can pull that off.
No, you can't. Can you explain the OG scenario for us? Like, whenever I hear it this much, I'm like, there's something there. It can't be nothing where he's, like, completely happy, blah, blah, blah. Like, what is it? On his end, he's looking there saying, I don't like where I'm positioned. I want to play somewhere else. Just break it down for us so everyone can have some clarity.
Well, I think there are a couple of things to it. Like, I think from the OG side of things, there's definitely something there. But, and I tweeted this the other day, like, I don't think it's a big deal. I don't think he's making a big deal of it. Sure, he probably wants a bigger role on this team. He definitely thinks that he can handle a bigger role on this team. But, like, who doesn't in the NBA? Like, the vast majority of NBA players, and this is probably true of any sport, the vast majority of NBA players believe that they should have a bigger role on their teams. And they wouldn't be where they are. They wouldn't be at this level if they didn't have, at times, an irrational sense of self-belief. So I don't think that that's a big deal necessarily. I think teams are probably making a bigger deal of it, and that's where the second part of this comes in. There are a lot of rumors out there. There are a lot of speculation. It's not coming from the Raptors. It rarely is with the Raptors. Everything that I'm hearing is that they're listening. They're not shopping them. They don't want to move them. They've been pretty clear. I mean, I've heard it privately, but even publicly since the trade deadline last year, their strong preference is to keep this core together, at least for now, let them grow and develop, at least here through the summer and through this coming season, and then go from there. But there are teams right now that are interested in OG Anunoby. Understandably so, for a bunch of reasons. Contract, good. Player, good. And I also think there's a lot of it kind of reminds me of the Pascal Siakam situation last year, where teams think that they can get this guy for pennies on the dollar. They think that there's an opportunity here to buy low. Siakam, it was because he was coming off of a bad season. OG, because he's got the injury issues. And now, because for whatever reason that this is out there, he might not be entirely pleased with his role. So all of a sudden, teams are floating it out there. They're leaking that they're interested and that he might be on the market. I think there's some truth to it. The Raptors are certainly open to it. I mean, even Bobby Webster the other day didn't come out and flat out deny it. But I don't think it's going to happen this summer. I really don't think it's going to happen tonight. At some point, he might get traded, but I don't think it's going to happen in the next few months.
Josh, where do you think his role is, even at when he's arrived at his ceiling and this core has arrived at their ceiling? Where does he fall with this group at best?
At best, offensively, he's the fourth or fifth option on this team, right? And that's right. Even including Scotty Barnes, who had a lower usage rate than OG last season, the only member of the starting five that had a lower usage rate than him last year, and will almost certainly have a higher usage rate than him this year. So he might be the fifth guy offensively in that group. That said, I mean, even Pascal Siakam, who's like the number one guy on this team offensively, his usage rate is pretty low relative to the other number one guys in the NBA. So this is a pretty diplomatic offense that Nick Nurse runs, where even for the fifth guy, like, OG has the ball in his hands, he's getting shots, he's getting looks. In his mind, though, and this is the really interesting question in terms of, like, what does OG want? He's still under contract for a couple more years, but he's got, and certainly his representatives, Clutch, they're probably looking ahead a couple of years from now and thinking, okay, well, we want to get this guy as big a contract as possible, maybe a max deal. Can he earn that as the fifth option on the Raptors? He's exceptional defensively, but I'm not sure defense necessarily makes you that max money, as great as a two-way player as he is. I'm wondering, is this a Jeremy Grant situation? Jeremy Grant, back in Denver a few years ago, looked at and said, well, I don't want to be the third or fourth option, maybe fifth option, on a good team. I want to go to, in that case, Detroit, and be the number one guy. I don't know that that went great for him. I mean, if you look at what his value is now, he was just traded for a lot less than he probably thinks that he's worth. So it didn't go great for him in that scenario. Do you want to be, if you're OG, do you want to be the third or fourth guy on a winning team? Or do you want to go somewhere and be the number one or number two guy on a team that's probably not as good?
I don't see many teams in this league where he is the number one. I've never been as high on Anunoby as others have. It's always been about potential with him and raw talent. I don't think he has a fluid offensive game whatsoever. I don't expect that to develop. I mean, this guy's been in the league for a while. He is not a great offensive player. I don't ever expect him to be a great offensive player.
And he can't stay healthy, and that's the bigger issue.
He's never healthy. And, you know, like you pointed out, Josh, and it's 100% accurate in reality, everyone's confident, everyone wants a little bit more. I'm curious if Anunoby, is his focus more on, well, Van Vliet and Siakam are doing this, and those are the guys I connect with? Or is it more, hey, Gary Trent and Scotty Barnes are here, and look what they represent. I'm worried about them. You know, are those the guys passing? Because you said offensively, no one wants the ball in OG's hand over Gary Trent's when Trent is hot. Like, we witnessed that multiple times this year. And Barnes, it's just a matter of time before they start drawing up plays. Like, the ball's going to be in his hand.
Yeah, well, we know the way the Raptors are thinking about this and the way that Nick Nurse is thinking about it. They love OG. They value OG. But they're looking at this like, okay, you want more? Come take it. Like, Nick Nurse has always operated that way and said, okay, well, you guys, and Masai is that way as well. You guys go out there and earn your contract or earn your role. For OG, he's got to play well, but he's also got to stay on the court. And I can tell you, while there's a lot of talk right now on social media about OG Anunoby's frustrations, there's some frustration on the part of the Raptors too. And you don't have to look very hard to see it. Nick Nurse, on a few occasions last season, pointed out very clearly that OG has been medically cleared from whatever it is, the hip or the finger. It happened a bunch of times where OG was medically cleared to play, and for whatever reason, still took a few more weeks after that. There's frustration on the Raptors' part, not necessarily that he's gotten hurt a number of times, because it's basketball. It happens, right? Like, and a lot of those injuries were fluke injuries. The emergency appendectomy, he's been poked in the eye more times than I can count. You can't help some of those things. But you look at somebody like Fred VanVleet. He's playing through everything, almost to a fault, to the point where he's wearing down throughout the course of a season, and OG Anunoby is not playing through a lot of things that I think the team believes that he can play through. So I do think there's some frustration on the part of the Raptors. There's some frustration on the part of OG. Ultimately, I think they still need each other enough to go forward. I do think, though, like, and this is why I think there's some truth to this in the sense that they're definitely having conversations and seeing what's out there. There's going to come a time, as committed as they are to this group, there's going to come a time in the next few years where this young core becomes very, very expensive, and you're going to have to consolidate some pieces. Combine two or three guys to go out there and get maybe that guy that's going to get you over the hump. To clarify, I don't think they're there right now. I don't think they think they're there right now. They're not a contender, depending on that whatever that piece
is that's
coming
in. But that's why
this
core is not worthy of that much commitment. Like, let's be honest. I like all the pieces. They're a playoff team. But this core is not going to be a championship core.
And that's why I'm not
sure
that now is the
time. So how committed can you be?
Now might not be the time to consolidate. Maybe they look at it and say, we're a year away from being in that position.
Right.
Let's, for now, collect assets, develop those assets. Let's see what those guys can do, Scotty and OG and Trent. Still young guys. Let's see what they can do with a full off season and maybe a full season, and then maybe revisit this next year where maybe they're looking to consolidate. But like I said, I think it's going to happen. You can't keep these guys together forever. You're going to be paying into the tax quite a bit. And to your point, Brian, like you'd then be paying tax for what I don't believe, and I don't think they believe, is a championship team. You're going to consolidate at some point. It's just the question is, when do you do it?
When do you do it?
Yeah. Jalu, you mentioned a couple years maybe down the road that Scotty Barnes could take some steps where they evolve and grow into a championship-type team. I have this expectation because sometimes I just dumb things down, and when somebody pulls a rabbit out of the hat like Masai did, bringing Kawhi Leonard here, is there like this expectation that when he signs this massive contract that he's got to do it again, or is he going to do it again? Because I'm not going to lie, I kind of have that expectation myself. It's like, you did it once, what are you going to do now? Because they can't win. Hayes just mentioned that group right there. That's not a championship team. They're all likable guys. They work hard. They take their craft seriously. So you well document what they do day in and day out. And, you know, they play the right way and committed to defense, which is a Nick Nurse staple. But how do they get to the next level? And I think it starts with Masai, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think, the model is the same as it was back in 2018, as unrepeatable as that seemed and still seems. I think it's the same idea, is just like collect assets, develop them, and then just wait. Patient, opportunistic, wait for that opportunity where somebody is out there that you think moves the needle. Ideally, not somebody who's going to leave in a year after that, but you wait for that guy that you can consolidate some of those pieces and go get. At the same time, like, that trade was a once-in-a-lifetime type situation. Like, you're not going to get a Kawhi Leonard caliber player for, with all due respect to DeMar DeRozan, what they gave up for him again. It was so unique and so circumstantial in terms of Kawhi's injury situation and his contract situation, and nobody knew what to expect from him when he ultimately came to Toronto, or if he was going to come to Toronto. It was so unique. I don't see that specifically happening again. But I do think, in the same way we always say this is a copycat league, every front office is paying close attention to every championship team. Golden State, how did they do it? Can we do the same thing? And for Masai, he's looking in-house. He's saying, we did this in 2019. How did we do it? Could we do it again? And one other thing I'll say, going back to your point, like, Scotty Barnes is the wild card in all of this, because if he develops the way a lot of people think that he can, and if he's your superstar player in 2, 3, 4 years down the road, well, that makes this whole thing a lot easier, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and that would be ideal, needless to say. If you've already acquired that piece that you had to seek out, or we believe you're going to be seeking out, you just got to let it grow, then it's about patience more than anything else, and you can still have success while you're being patient. The draft goes tonight. Raptors picking 33rd. There's going to be some Canadian content in the first round, likely in the lottery. So enjoy it. Josh, great catching up with you, buddy. And we'll do this again real soon. Thank you for this.
All right, guys. Take care.
There's Josh Lewenberg, our TSN Raptors reporter. Again, the Magic are on the clock tonight. You can watch it on TSN. and the Raptors are picked 33rd. So we'll break that all down tomorrow. We got Tim Kirkjian coming up in the final hour. Pierre LeBrun as well back into the Cup final. Back into the Shohei Ohtani stats, the Jordan Romano split that's been circulating online. We'll tell you about that. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.